Hello, OWL listeners, and welcome to our program, Travel, brought to you by OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Jeff Chandler, and during the next half hour, I will be reading articles from various travel outlets here on OWL Radio. Today, we'll start with something very appropriate. It's pretty hot. So we're going to read an article from the San Antonio Express News entitled, Visitors Drawn to the Hottest Spot on Earth. This is by Ty O'Neill of the Associated Press. Death Valley National Park, California. As uninviting as it sounds, Death Valley National Park beckons. Even as the already extreme temperatures are forecast to climb even higher, potentially topping records amid a major U.S. heat wave, tourists are arriving at this infamous desert landscape on the California-Nevada border. Daniel Jushues snapped a photo earlier this week of a famed thermometer outside the aptly named Furnace Creek Visitor Center after challenging himself to a run in the sweltering heat. "I was really noticing, you know, I didn't feel so hot, but my body was working really hard to cool myself," said Jushues, an active runner who is visiting from Germany. His photo showed the thermometer reading at 120 degrees Fahrenheit. Most visitors at this time of year make it only a short distance to any site in the park, which bills itself as the lowest, hottest, and driest place on Earth, before returning to the sanctuary of an air-conditioned vehicle. Last weekend, the temperatures could climb past 130 degrees Fahrenheit, but that likely won't deter some willing to brave the heat. Signs at hiking trails advise against venturing out after 10 a.m., though nighttime temperatures are still expected to be over 90 degrees. The hottest temperature recorded at Death Valley was 134 degrees Fahrenheit in July 1913, according to the National Park Service. Other parks have long-standing warnings for hikers. At Grand Canyon National Park in Arizona, officials are cautioning people to stay off the trails for most of the day in the inner canyon, where temperatures can be 20 degrees hotter than at the rim. In West Texas, Big Bend National Park near the Rio Grande is expected to be at least 110 degrees Fahrenheit. The National Weather Service has said it's best to just stay off the trails in the afternoon. The precautions vary across parks and landscapes, said Cynthia Hernandez, a Park Service spokesperson. Certain trails might be closed if conditions are too dangerous. Alerts and restrictions are posted on websites for individual parks, Hernandez said. Preliminary information from the Park Service shows at least four people have died this year from heat-related causes across the 424 national park sites. That includes a 65-year-old man from San Diego who was found dead in his vehicle at Death Valley earlier this month, according to a news release. Death Valley National Park emphasizes self-reliance over expectations of rescue. While rangers patrol park roads and can assist motorists in distress, there's no guarantee lost tourists will get aid in time. More than 1.1 million people annually visit the desert park, which sits over a portion of the California-Nevada border west of Las Vegas. At 5,346 square miles, it's the largest national park in the lower 48. About one-fifth of the visitors come in June, July, and August. Many are tempted to explore, even after the suggested cutoff times. Physical activity can make the heat even more unbearable and leave people feeling exhausted. Sun-baked rocks, sand, and soil still radiate after sunset. "It does feel like the sun has gone through your skin and is getting into your bones," said Park Ranger Nicole Andler. Others mentioned feeling their eyes drying out from the hot wind sweeping through the valley. "It's very hot. I mean, especially when there's a breeze. You would think that maybe that would give you some slight relief from the heat, but it just really does feel like an air blow dryer just going back into your face," said Alicia Dempster, who was visiting from Edinburgh, Scotland. Death Valley is a narrow 282-foot basin that is below sea level, but situated among high, steep mountain ranges, according to the Park Service website. The bone dry air and meager plant coverage allows sunlight to heat up the desert surface. The rocks and the soil emit all that heat in turn, which then becomes trapped in the depths of the valley. The park's brownish hills feature signage saying heat kills and other messaging such as a stovepipe wells sign warning travelers of the savage summer sun. Still, there are several awe-inspiring sights that draw tourists. Badwater Basin, made up of salt flats, is considered the lowest point in all of North America. The eye-opening 600-foot Ubehebe crater dates back over 2,000 years. And Zabriskie Point is a prime sunrise viewing spot. Eugene Chen from Taiwan called the park beautiful and iconic, very special place. Josh Miller, a visitor from Indianapolis, who has been to 20 national parks so far, shared that sentiment. It's hot, but the scenery is awesome. For our next article, we will go to USA Today to an article entitled, Can It Be Too Hot for a Plane to Fly? How Phoenix is Handling Record Heat. This is by Michael Salerno of USA Today. Phoenix, Arizona. When Delta Airlines Flight 555 from Las Vegas was canceled before its intended July 17th departure to Atlanta, the inside of the plane was so hot that people fell ill. Fox News field producer Krista Garvin recounted in a series of tweets that passengers were stuck on the plane for 3 hours while temperatures outside were around 111 degrees. Paramedics wheeled out at least 3 people who passed out from heat exhaustion. Cities across the country, including Phoenix, are coping with extreme heat this summer. The heat can affect aircraft performance, such as by reducing the amount of weight the plane can safely carry. It can even be too hot for a plane to take off. Despite this summer's record-breaking streak of 110-degree-plus-degree days at Phoenix, airlines have reported few to no cancellations at Sky Harbor in recent days. But the National Weather Service is forecasting 119-degree temperatures in Metro Phoenix, how hot it was when Phoenix Sky Harbor International Airport most recently grounded flights because of heat in 2013 and 2017. Air travelers should be aware of the potential hazards involved with flying in extreme heat. How hot is it? How hot is too hot for an airplane to fly? It depends on the aircraft, the altitude, and the total weight of the passengers and cargo, according to the Federal Aviation Administration. The majority of the airlines that serve Phoenix Sky Harbor have updated their airliner performance charts in recent years, with new data that goes up to and above the 122-degree range, airport spokesman Eric Everts said. Most passengers who fly a major airline at Sky Harbor or with Allegiant Air at Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport will likely fly aboard a Boeing or Airbus jet. While these large jets are capable of handling high temperatures, aircraft manufacturers are cautious to say there is no specific temperature where a type of airplane can or cannot take off. It depends on multiple factors such as wind direction and speed, barometric pressure, runway conditions, and whether air conditioning is on or off, Airbus spokesperson Christy Tucker told the Arizona Republic. Airlines generate proprietary performance charts for the airports at which they operate, and there may be an upper limit to the outside temperatures for which their performance data ranges have been calculated. When was the last time heat grounded planes in Phoenix? In June 2017, at least 50 regional American Airlines flights were canceled because of the 119-degree temperatures. The regional flights flown under the name American Eagle used Bombardier CRJ aircraft that couldn't fly in temperatures above 118 degrees. The 2017 cancellations were the most recent of 3 times in Sky Harbor's history when flights were grounded because of extreme heat. It first happened in 1990, when Phoenix hit its all-time high temperature of 122 degrees. Now these near-record temperatures are returning. Phoenix observed a high of 119 degrees last Wednesday, and the Weather Service forecasted the city would hit 119 again on Thursday or Friday. Why is extreme heat bad for airplanes? Air is less dense and generates less lift in extreme heat, making it harder for airplanes to take off, according to the FAA. In some cases, airlines must reduce the amount of cargo and or passengers on the plane in order to take off in high heat conditions. An airplane's weight at takeoff is the most important factor that affects its performance in extremely hot temperatures, Tucker said. Ultimately, it's up to the airline and the flight crew to determine whether it's safe to fly based on the maximum temperatures and conditions, the FAA stated. The federal agency does not cancel flights. How has the heat affected flights at one of the nation's hottest airports? Data from the flight tracking website FlightAware showed few canceled flights at Sky Harbor in recent days, with 18 cancellations recorded from Monday, July 17th to Thursday, July 20th. FlightAware's data does not specify why a flight was canceled. In addition to airlines flying jets that can operate at high maximum temperatures, Sky Harbor's runways are able to accommodate takeoffs and landings in hot weather. The runways are made of 16-inch thick reinforced concrete, which can better handle extreme heat and the stress of heavy aircraft than asphalt. There is nothing that keeps the concrete from getting too hot. It is just the design of the steel-reinforced concrete that enables it to withstand the extreme temperatures, Everts said. How are airline workers handling the heat? Some airline workers, including ground crews and baggage handlers, work outdoors. That can be dangerous in extreme heat. The New York Times published a story on how extreme heat affects workers, which included an account from a Phoenix airport worker. Some social media commenters singled out a passage in the story mentioning one of the airport's contractors, Prospect Airport Services, not allowing workers to bring water with them. Sky Harbor tweeted in response to the concerns, "We work closely with our airport vendors and stakeholders to ensure their employees have access to water and receive proper information about staying hydrated." A Southwest Airlines spokesperson told the Republic that its workers are trained and experienced in operating during heat conditions and keep themselves and others safe by drinking water frequently, wearing protective clothing, and looking out for other employees. This was a report by Michael Salerno at Gannett. Our next article is also from USA Today, and it's in regards to national parks and the National Park Service, and is entitled, "Cuyahoga Valley is one of America's most popular parks, but it wasn't always so inviting." Cuyahoga Valley National Park may not be a household name, but it's one of America's 10 most popular national parks. The Ohio Park saw nearly 3 million visitors last year, which was more than bucket list destinations like Bryce, Glacier, and Grand Teton. But it wasn't always a place people would want to visit. The Cuyahoga River that infamously caught on fire many times, the last time in 1969 down in Cleveland, that river runs through this park, and it's named for that, said Pamela Barnes, the park's community engagement supervisor and public information officer. "We're about to turn 50 in 2024, and we have been working to restore this valley. People who have left the area, who came back, might be like, wow." Here's what you should know about visiting Cuyahoga Valley, the latest national park in USA Today's year-long series. Why is Cuyahoga Valley National Park unique? "It's like the epicenter for the modern 20th century environmental movement," said Barnes. "Following that worldwide story that was told about the Cuyahoga River came the Clean Water Act, the creation of the Environmental Protection Agency. So this park really has a story of restoration, going from a river that you don't want to be near to a river that we're inviting people to enjoy. One place where change is especially evident is the Beaver Marsh." That is right in front of your face, the story of restoration, because you're looking at a marsh that supports over 200 species of birds, residents, and those that migrate, Barnes said. And that's a wetland that used to be a scrapyard, like a car junkyard. Where is Cuyahoga Valley National Park? Cuyahoga Valley National Park is about 7 miles from Akron and less than 20 miles from Cleveland. It's right in the middle of these two urban areas, and it just feels like a green island in the middle, Barnes said. It's 33,000 acres, 125 miles of trails, and something for everyone to do. So that may come as a bit of a surprise in a metropolitan area. The closest major airport is Cleveland Hopkins International Airport, which is a few miles closer than Akron Canton Airport. Does it cost anything to go to Cuyahoga Valley National Park? No. Cuyahoga Valley National Park does not charge entry fees nor require reservations. And what's the best time of year to visit Cuyahoga Valley National Park? Summer is the most popular time for visits, but Cuyahoga Valley is truly a year-round park. It is spectacular in the fall if you go to the Ledges Overlook, Barnes said. You can just see the colors across the valley. It's just bright, vibrant colors. Come winter, the trails open up to cross-country skiing, and downhill skiing is available at two privately run ski resorts within the park's borders. We have snowshoes that people can borrow for free. We have some really pretty fantastic sledding hills, too. She said spring is a popular time for bird watching and hiking. A lot of people like to hike throughout the year, but some people find that they might want to stay inside in the winter, she added with a chuckle. How many days do you need in Cuyahoga Valley National Park? Visitors can easily spend a full day or weekend at the park. In addition to places like Ledges, and the Beaver Marsh, visitors will want to see the park's picturesque waterfalls. The most popular waterfall, of course, would be Brandywine Falls, and what's great about it is it's accessible for anyone, Barnes said of the 60-foot waterfall. It's just a short walk down a wooden boardwalk to a totally accessible viewing area. Because there are several areas within the footprint of the park that are not actually part of the park, Barnes recommends travelers stop at the Boston Mill Visitor Center at the start of their trip. Rangers can really help you customize your visit. What Native American tribes were in the Cuyahoga Valley? The park says Native Americans called the park's winding namesake river Cuyahoga, or Crooked. Paleo Indians first arrived in the area at the end of the Ice Age, roughly 13,000 years ago, according to the park. Over the millennia, they were followed by archaic and woodland peoples. The valley's last long-standing native people are referred to as the Whittesley people. The park says it's not entirely clear why they left the area in the 1600s, but they were gone before the first European explorers passed through the Cuyahoga Valley. The park notes several tribes came to the valley in the 1700s after being forced out of their own lands, including the Ottawa, Ojibwa, and possibly Mingo. But by the early 1800s, they'd been pushed out. Our next story is by Eve Chen from USA Today, and it's entitled, "This Gorgeous Lake Was Once a Mountain. What's so special about Crater Lake National Park?" There are lots of stunning lakes across America, but none like you'll find at Crater Lake National Park in Oregon. Its namesake lake is the deepest in the country, with an average depth of 1,943 feet, according to the park. In addition to being mind-bogglingly deep, Crater Lake's waters are extremely clear, famously blue and rarely freeze over, making them a spectacular sight all year round, though visitors may want to plan for certain months in particular. What's so special about Crater Lake? Crater Lake actually started as a mountain, Mount Mazama. The park explains a volcanic eruption roughly 7,700 years ago caused the mountain to eventually collapse inward, forming a volcanic crater. Archaeologists have found evidence of Native Americans who camped but did not appear to settle on the mountain prior to its eruption. The park notes the area is considered sacred to many indigenous tribes in Oregon and California. According to the park's website, Makalaks, now Klamath Indians, held the belief that this place was so holy that looking upon it would lead to death. Is Crater Lake one of the seven wonders of the world? No, but Travel Oregon, the state's official tourism arm, has dubbed it one of the seven wonders of Oregon. Crater Lake National Park is located about 4 hours away from Portland by car. The park is in southern Oregon, near Klamath Falls. The nearest airport is Rogue Valley International Medford Airport. You can easily spend a full day at Crater Lake National Park, but visitors who are tight on time can drive along its scenic rim road, or rim drive, if you will, in about 2 hours, with stops along its 30 overlooks for sightseeing, according to the park. What's the best month to visit Crater Lake? The answer depends on what you're looking for. Crater Lake has two main seasons: winter from November through April, and summer from July through September, according to the park. They're both beautiful in their own way, but summer is busier and just about everything in the park is open and operating. The park says openings and closings are not as predictable in May, June, and October, but the park itself is open all year. Can you swim or fish in Crater Lake? Swimming is allowed in some areas, but visitors should note there are no lifeguards and the water is cold, with surface levels ranging between 38 to 62 degrees Fahrenheit, depending on the time of year, according to the park. Fishing is allowed in Crater Lake and all streams except Lost Creek and Sun Creek, where native bull trout live. The species is considered threatened and protected under the Endangered Species Act. No fishing permit or licenses are required. And what are some fun facts about Crater Lake? Crater Lake is not connected to any other body of water. Its water comes from millennia of rain and snow. With an annual average of 43 feet of snow, Crater Lake is one of the snowiest places in the United States, the Interior Department notes. There is an old man in the lake. Okay, not really, but there is a 30-foot mountain log called the Old Man that's been floating around the lake since at least 1896, according to the park. A peculiar thing about the Old Man is it floats vertically. Among the park's wildlife, there is one species you'll only find in Crater Lake, the Mazama newt, a subspecies of rough-skinned newt more common in the Pacific Northwest, according to the park and Department of the Interior. Our next article is from the Associated Press in Travel News under Tourism, and this is by Colleen Berry. It's a little crazy right now. European tourist spots are slammed with crowds. Venice, Italy. Tourists are waiting more than 2 hours to visit the Acropolis in Athens. Taxi lines at Rome's main train station are running just as long, and so many visitors are concentrating around St. Mark's Square in Venice that crowds get backed up crossing bridges, even on weekdays. After 3 years of pandemic limitations, tourism is expected to exceed 2019 records in some of Europe's most popular destinations this summer, from Barcelona, Spain, and Rome, Athens, and Venice, to the scenic islands of Santorini in Greece, Capri in Italy, and Mallorca in Spain. While European tourists edged the industry toward recovery last year, the upswing this summer is largely led by Americans, boosted by a strong dollar and, in some cases, pandemic savings. Many arrive motivated by revenge tourism, so eager to explore again that they're undaunted by higher airfares and hotel costs. Lauren Gonzalez, age 25, landed in Rome this week with four high school and college friends for a 16-day romp through the Italian capital of Florence and the seaside after 3 years of U.S. vacations. They aren't concerned about the high prices and the crowds. We kind of saved up, and we know this is a trip that is meaningful, said Gonzalez, who works at a marketing agency. We are all in our mid-20s. It's a moment of change in our lives. This is something special. The crowds don't deter us. We live in Florida. We have all been to Disney World in the heat. We're all good. Americans appear equally unperturbed by recent riots in Paris and other French cities. There was a small drop in flight bookings, but it was mainly for domestic travel. Some of my friends said it's a little crazy there right now, but we thought summer is a really good time for us to go, so we'll just take our precautions. Joanne Titus, a 38-year-old from Maryland, said while strolling the iconic Champs-Élysées shopping boulevard. The return of mass tourism is a boon to hotels and restaurants, which suffered under COVID-19 restrictions. But there is a downside, too, as pledges to rethink tourism to make it more sustainable have largely gone unheeded. The pandemic should have taught us a lesson, said Alessandra Priante, director of the Regional Department for Europe at the UN World Tourism Organization. Instead, she said, the mindset is about recuperating the cash. Everything is about revenue, about the here and now. We have to see what is going to happen in 2 or 3 years' time because the prices at the moment are unsustainable, she said. The mayor of Florence is stopping new short-term apartment rentals from proliferating in the historic center, which is protected as a UNESCO heritage site, as mayors of Italy's other art cities call for a nationwide law to manage the sector. Elsewhere, the anti-mass tourism movements that were active before the pandemic have not reappeared, but the battle lines are still being drawn. Graffiti misdirected tourists in Barcelona away from, instead of toward, the Gaudi-designed Park Güell. Despite predictable pockets of over-tourism, travel to and within Europe overall is still down 10% from 2019, according to the World Tourism Organization. That is partly due to fewer people visiting countries close to the war in Ukraine, including Lithuania, Finland, Moldova, and Poland. In addition, Chinese visitors have not fully returned, with flights from China and other Asia-Pacific countries down 45% from 2019, according to travel data company Forward Keys. The rising appetite for long-haul travel from America is the continued result of the revenge travel boom caused by the pandemic lockdowns, said Tim Henschel, CEO of Hotel Planner, a booking site. Big cities within these popular European countries are certainly going to be busy during the summer. Americans have pushed arrivals in Italian bucket list destinations like Rome, Florence, Venice, and Capri above pre-pandemic levels, according to Italy's hotel association, Federalberghi. They bring a lot of pent-up buying power. U.S. tourists in Italy spent 74% more in tax-free indulgences in the first 3 months of the year compared with the same period of 2019. Perhaps nothing has encouraged the rise in tourism in key spots more than a surge in short-term apartment rentals. With hotel room numbers constant, Bocca of Federalberghi blames the surge for the huge crowds in Rome, inflating taxi lines and crowding crosswalks so that city buses cannot continue their routes. In Rome and Florence, walking down the street, out of every building door emerges a tourist with a suitcase. While Florence's mayor is limiting the number of short-term rentals in the historic center to 8,000, no action has been taken in Venice. The Canal Line city counts 49,432 residents in its historic center and 49,272 tourist beds, nearly half of those being apartments available for short-term rental. That's all the time we have today. You've been listening to Travel on Owl Radio. You can listen to Owl Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.owlradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Jeff Chandler saying goodbye from Owl Radio.